Hello, and welcome to part two of my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley, and I'm a professor in the Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where for the past 7 years I've been teaching an undergraduate class titled Antarctic Ecology, Geology, History, and Policy. In this podcast, I've distilled this class down into numerous parts that cover all these topics about Antarctica. Part two presented here is more on the geology of Antarctica, titled Antarctic Origins. To understand how Antarctica became to be the cold, remote place it is today, we have to travel back hundreds of millions of years to when the continents as we know them today were very different in size, shape, and position on the globe. I'm sure you are familiar with the theory of plate tectonics, also known as continental drift. And that theory plays a major role in how Antarctica developed as we know it today. Believe it or not, the idea that continents actually moved over time like giant floating islands was still being questioned and debated as late as the 1960s, and it was discoveries in the fossil record of Antarctica at that time that helped prove that plate tectonics was a real process. Basically, plate tectonics tells us that each continent is comprised of continental crust, mostly granitic rocks, while the ocean bottoms are comprised of oceanic crust, or basalts. These crusts are the top part of a thick layer of rock covering the surface of the Earth that is elastic with pressure, called the lithosphere. Below the lithosphere is a layer of highly viscous molten rock that is 80 to 200 kilometers deep, known as the asthenosphere. It is this lower layer that causes the movements of the continental and oceanic crusts, or plates, and they move so slowly it is hardly discernible in our lifetime. However, we are all familiar with earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, which are occurring at the edges of the plates as they move against each other. The plates are either colliding into each other, which over time can cause uplift and create mountain ranges, or one plate can slide under another or subduct below it, or two plates may be spreading apart or diverging, creating new continental or oceanic crust in between. For example, a long boundary between several plates exists along the ocean bottom in the mid-Atlantic, and these plates are diverging, creating new oceanic crust from molten lava rising from below, while older crust at the opposite sides of these plates subducts under other plates and is destroyed. It's like a giant conveyor belt in the center of the ocean with movements to the east and west from the center line of divergence. This diverging line can be traced all the way north through Iceland, where you can actually stand on the divergence at Þingvellir National Park, where early Vikings that colonized Iceland once held their law courts. So if you ever go to Iceland, visit this park so you can see where plates are actually pulling apart. Thanks to plate tectonics, continents have been drifting, changing in shape and size, and banging into each other, and then pulling apart over hundreds of millions of years. Geologists have been able to recreate the position and size of these continents through time, and the fossil record provides the means to test hypotheses on when and where our current continents once existed. I'm sure you've all heard about supercontinents, of Pangaea and Gondwana, and those play an important role in how Antarctica eventually formed. But have you heard of another, even older supercontinent called Rodinia? Let's begin there. Rodinia was a supercontinent in the northern hemisphere approximately 750 million years ago. The central plate of this continent was Laurentia, later to become North America, while other plates, including East Antarctica and Australia, attached to it. Support for this connection was found on a remote glacial moraine in Antarctica, where a granite boulder was discovered to have the same chemical composition of granites in the western U.S. This was an amazing discovery and led to the development of what is known as the SWET hypothesis, or Southwest U.S. East Antarctic Connection, published by Gudge et al. In the journal Science in 2008. So if you can't get to Antarctica, go visit the southwestern U.S., and you'll be on the same continental crust. Now let's skip ahead in time to about 550 million years ago. By now, Rodinia has broken apart, with some of the plates moving into the southern hemisphere. Here again, most of them came together to form another supercontinent called Gondwana. This became an amalgamation of all the southern continents today, including Australia and Antarctica. Now the plate that included Antarctica was pushed farther south towards the South Pole. Then, by about 335 million years ago, the last northern plate, Laurasia, connected with Gondwana in the north to form the supercontinent of Pangaea. Antarctica was far enough south to have a giant ice sheet form over it by about 300 million years ago, remnants of which can be found in glacial rocks in the Trans-Antarctic Mountains today. That ice sheet over Antarctica was not to last, as climate warmed after this and the ice sheet melted. Now at least part of Antarctica became covered with trees and ferns, as evidenced today by large coal deposits that contain fossil leaf impressions and wood from a tree, Glossopteris, which has been found in all other southern continents as well, again providing convincing evidence that Gondwana once existed. There are other shared fossils as well, including ginkgo trees and fossil reptiles such as Lystrosaurus, that survived the great Permian extinctions that wiped out over 90% of marine and 70% of terrestrial life at about 252 million years ago. I really enjoyed a book about discoveries of Lystrosaurus in Karoo National Park, South Africa, called Gorgon by Peter Ward, published in 2004. He also goes into the cause of the Permian extinction if you want to read more about that. Further, if you ever get to Cape Town, South Africa, go to the Iziko Museum, where you can see fossils of this amazing animal. Continuing on our geologic journey, we now skip ahead to about 152 million years ago. Pangaea is beginning to break up as Gondwana moves away from the North American plate, forming what will become the Atlantic Ocean in between. This is also when the fossil record in Antarctica now has dinosaurs present, with one large carnivorous species of theropod, Cryolophosaurus, a crested dinosaur from the Jurassic. In fact, its name means frozen crested reptile, and it must have been adapted to cooler temperatures, as Antarctica was still in a southern position, though not as far south as today. This dinosaur, the first to be discovered in Antarctica, as well as a few other herbivorous species, were able to thrive there until the continent drifted farther to the south. Then Gondwana began to break up in stages from about 180 to 35 million years ago. The plate with Antarctica continued moving south, along with a microplate that fused with it that became the Ellsworth Mountains in West Antarctica. The Trans-Antarctic Mountains were uplifted during this period, at about 40 to 50 million years ago, exposing those glacial rocks from the older ice sheet for geologists to find in the 20th century. These mountains also blocked glaciers from flowing off the polar plateau to the west, where, in the southern Ross Sea region, it resulted in the formation of the Dry Valleys, a large ice-free area discovered by Robert Falcon Scott in his first expedition to Antarctica in 1901 to 1904. You will hear more about these valleys in future podcasts. Then, at about 35 million years ago, Antarctica finally broke free of Gondwana, perhaps caused by mantle plumes of lava erupting from below the plates at this boundary, and forced Antarctica to move into its present southerly position. The gap in between became Drake Passage and allowed ocean currents and winds to flow all around Antarctica, further isolating it from northern continents. The present ice sheet that covers Antarctica now began to form, where it remains today. However, the ice on Antarctica today is not 35 million years old. The ice sheet on the polar plateau achieved its thickness over millions of years of snowfall turning to ice, but the ice sheet moves slowly, flowing off the plateau, to be replaced by more ice from precipitation. So the oldest ice in Antarctica today may only be about 1 million years old. Despite all this ice developing over the continent, there is recent evidence for another warming period in the late Miocene at about 14 million years ago. We know this from the fossil record again. Another tree, a southern beech very similar to those growing in Patagonia today, of the genus Notophagus, has been found in the Trans-Antarctic Mountains and dry valleys. This and other fossils suggest Antarctica may have been about 20 degrees warmer 14 million years ago, with an environment similar to that of southern Patagonia today, with its extensive beech forests. Then, after this brief warming period, it cooled again as Antarctica became what we see today. One last comment about the fossil record and Antarctica, this time in regard to penguins. The oldest penguin-like birds are from New Zealand and date as old as 61 million years in the late Cretaceous. These birds, as with penguins today, were flightless and had wings modified as flippers to move through the water, essentially flying through the water instead of air, indicating their marine adaptations. By 50 million years ago, the fossil record on Seymour Island in the Antarctic Peninsula has revealed that a diversity of penguin species had evolved by that time in what was probably a very rich marine environment. These species, some of which were up to 6 feet tall, were morphologically the same as modern penguins, showing how successful these birds have become in exploiting the marine environment and continue to do so today. Before I end this part of the podcast, if you want to learn more about Antarctic origins, I highly recommend a BBC docuseries, Rise of the Continents, with one episode devoted to Australia and Antarctica. Next, on part three of this podcast, I will go into the great ice sheets of Antarctica and the development of modern climate there. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley of the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and thank you for listening.